It's time now for Living Theology, a weekly program in which Dr. John B. McDonald seeks to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ, living with competence and joy. With today's episode, here's Dr. McDonald.
What do you know about doubt, and how do you deal with doubt? Doubt is an uncertainty about someone or something. It may even be a belief that something may not be true. Some take the stand that doubt is wrong and sinful, always. They say, if you have faith, you will not have doubt. I'm not so sure it's that black and white. I may doubt that I can run 10 kilometers in an hour. This is based on the fact that I haven't run 10 kilometers for a long time. Is that doubt wrong or sinful? I don't think so. There is one way to find out if that doubt is valid or not. But what if you doubt God's goodness? This may be based on how you perceive your experience. For example, God did not intervene when you asked Him to do something you believe to be praiseworthy, such as, say, heal a sick child. Some of God's greatest servants have had doubts. Here are two instances. From a prison cell, John the Baptist sends a message to Jesus. Are you the one who is to come? Or should we expect someone else? Luke 7, verse 18. John did not comprehend why he was left in prison. After all, he was announcing the coming of the Messiah. It didn't align with his expectations, and he was uncertain, even, may we say, doubtful. David writes in Psalm 94, verse 19, when doubts filled my mind. We don't know the precise situation David was in, but the context indicates he was being attacked or oppressed by the wicked, and doubts filled his mind. Perhaps he was asking, where is God in all of this? To ignore or deny doubt in our lives is unhealthy and potentially destructive. Doubts do not go away by simply trying to ignore them. We may bury them for a time, but like an untreated wound, they become infected and more toxic. I'm proposing four elements to our response to doubt, but first, let's examine doubt in the life of the Apostle Thomas. Thomas is often called the doubter. Jesus had been crucified and his body placed in a tomb. A few days later, the disciples heard rumors that Jesus' body was missing. Earlier that day, women claimed to have seen Jesus alive. We read this in John 20, verses 1 to 18. And here's what we hear when we break in at verse 19. On the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together, with the doors locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Verse 24. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus then told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." As the disciples, except for Thomas, gathered in fear behind locked doors, something amazing happened. Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." John 20, verse 19. How could this be? The disciples knew that Jesus had died and his lifeless body put into the tomb, but here he was, alive. Maybe it was an apparition or something that looked and sounded like Jesus, but he showed them his hands and his side, irrefutable evidence left by Roman nails and a Roman spear. Then the disciples were glad. They were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. By contrast, Thomas was not with the other disciples. We are not told why. And when he heard the news that the others had seen Jesus alive, Thomas had his doubts. "Unless I see, I will not believe." What do we learn from Thomas when we experience doubt? Here are four elements to equip you. They are drawn from this incident with Thomas. First is curiosity. Let me call it a holy curiosity. Thomas had been with Jesus for at least 3 years. He was not saying, "That's impossible." That would be slamming the door shut on the possibility that the report of the other disciples was true. I suggest Thomas was saying something more like, "I can't comprehend this. I don't understand. This is beyond my ability to accept. Help me through my doubts, my uncertainty." So, from within his doubts, he makes room. He makes space for honest confession. I call this an attitude of holy curiosity. Second, is that honest confession? Thomas expresses honestly what he's thinking and feeling. He doesn't ignore or deny his doubt. He tells the others, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." Fair enough. It's out. He's not ignoring or denying his doubt. He's admitting his limits. He needs something to move him forward from his doubts. It's precisely this confession that Jesus later repeats to Thomas. "Put your finger here. See my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas is honest about his doubts, and Jesus meets Thomas in those doubts. Third, healthy community. It's important to recognize that Thomas did not remain isolated from healthy community. The other disciples tell him what they experienced. "We have seen the Lord." They were joyful and exuberant. By contrast, the response of Thomas comes across as a calm, perhaps cynical, doubt-filled statement. "Unless I see." The disciples do not argue with him. They don't condemn him. They don't abandon him. This community of disciples was a safe place for Thomas to ask difficult questions, even to express doubt. Unfortunately, not every community is like that. But the third element is this: remain engaged with healthy community. Fourth, healing correction. The result in Thomas's life is healing correction. Perhaps a better word than correction would be breakthrough or growth or epiphany, even liberation. His doubt is transformed into worship as he says to Jesus, "My Lord and my God," John 20, verse 29. I imagine Thomas going down on his knees as he makes this simple yet profound statement, "My Lord and my God." Thomas, the doubter, has been transformed. But let us remember those four elements. Nurture a holy curiosity. Maintain honest confession. Be engaged in healthy community. And experience healing correction. What does history inform us about concerning Thomas, this transformed doubter? Within 20 years, it is reported that Thomas had taken the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, to India. Today, a large and vibrant Christian population still lives in Kerala province in southwest India, and they trace its roots back to the ministry of the Apostle Thomas. Thomas is believed to have been killed in India, his body buried in Chennai, India. For Thomas, doubt was a catalyst used to transform him into a more competent and joyful follower of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You've been listening to John B. MacDonald in Living Theology, a program designed to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ. Dr. MacDonald has an extensive online writing ministry. To learn more about John and his work, follow the links on the producer's page at HopeStreamRadio.com.